and cardamom. Text number 52 to 54. Nayadaratam astaya.
Nayadaratam astaya.
Jaitramani ganarpitam.
Jaitramani ganarpitam.
Vispurjach chanda kodando.
Vispurjach chanda kodando.
Pratena trasayanakam.
Pratena trasayanakam.
Nayadaratam astaya.
Nayadaratam astaya.
Jaitramani ganarpitam.
Jaitramani ganarpitam.
Vispurjach chanda kodando.
Vispurjach chanda kodando.
Pratena trasayanakam.
Pratena trasayanakam.
Nayadaratam astaya. Jaitramani ganarpitam.
Jaitramani ganarpitam.
Vispurjach chanda kodando.
Vispurjach chanda kodando.
Ratena trasayanakam.
Ratena trasayanakam.
Not.
Not.
Yada.
Yada.
When.
When.
Ratam.
Ratam.
A chariot.
Chariot.
Astaya.
Astaya.
Having mounted.
Having mounted.
Jaitram.
Jaitram.
Victorious.
Victorious.
Money.
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 Of jewels.
Of jewels.
Agana.
Agana.
With clusters.
With clusters.
Arpitam.
Arpitam.
Bedecked.
Bedecked.
Vispurjat.
Vispurjat.
Twanging.
Twanging.
Chanda.
Chanda.
A fearful sound just to punish the criminals. Kodanda.
Kodanda.
Bow.
Bow.
Ratena.
Ratena.
By the presence of such a chariot.
By the presence of such a chariot.
Trasian.
Trasian.
Threaten me.
Threaten me.
Hakan.
Hakan.
All the culprits.
All the culprits.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shiva Prabhupada. If you did not mount your victorious jewel chariot, whose mere presence threatens culprits, if you did not produce fierce sounds by the twanging of your bow, and if you did not roam about the world like the brilliant sun, leading a huge army, whose trembling feet whose trembling feet cause the globe of the earth to tremble, then all the moral laws governing the varnas and ashrams created by the Lord Himself would be broken by the rogues and rascals. Purport. It is the duty of a responsible king to protect the social and spiritual orders in human society. The spiritual orders are divided into four ashrams: brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. And the social orders according to the work and qualification made up of the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, the vaishyas, and the sudras. These social orders, according to the different grades of work and qualification, are described in Bhagavad Gita. Unfortunately, for want of proper protection by responsible kings, the system of social and spiritual orders has now become a hereditary caste system. But this is not the actual system. Human society means that society is making progress towards spiritual realization. The most advanced human society was known as Arya. Arya refers to those who are advancing. So the question is, which society is advancing? Advancement does not mean creating material necessities unnecessarily and thus wasting human energy and aggravation over so-called material comforts. Real advancement is advancement towards spiritual realization, and the community which acted towards this end was known as the Aryan civilization. The intelligent men, the brahmanas, as exemplified by Kardama Muni, were engaged in advancing the spiritual cause, and kshatriyas, like Emperor Swayambhuva, used to rule the country and ensure that all facilities for spiritual realization were nicely provided. It is the duty of the king to travel all over the country and see that everything is in order. Indian civilization on the basis of the four varnas and ashrams deteriorated because of her dependency on foreigners, or those who did not follow the civilization of varnashrama. Thus, the varnashrama system is now being degraded into the caste system. The institution of four varnas and four ashramas is confirmed herewith to be Bhagavat Rachitta, which means designed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, this is also confirmed. Chaturvanyam Maya Shrishtam. The Lord says that the institution of four varnas and four ashramas is created by me. Anything created by the Lord cannot be closed or covered. The divisions of varna and ashrams will continue to exist, either in their original form or in a degraded form, but because they are created by the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they cannot be extinguished. They are like the sun, a creation of God, and therefore will remain. Either covered by clouds or in a clear sky, the sun will continue to exist. Similarly, when the Varnashram system becomes degraded, it appears as a hereditary caste system. But in every society, there is an intelligent class of men, a martial class, a mercantile class, and a laborer class. When they are regulated for cooperation among communities according to the Vedic principles, then there is peace and spiritual advancement. But when there is hatred and malpractice and mutual mistrust in the caste system, the whole system becomes degraded. And as stated herein, it creates a deplorable state. At the present moment, the entire world is in this deplorable condition because of giving rights to so many interests. This is due to the degradation of the four castes of varnas and ashrams. Omagyan Tivanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Nalitamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati Swa Padantikam Vancha Kaupat Rubyascha Kripa Sindubi Evacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Prabhupada's pointing out that the Varnashram system is always there because it's natural. It means that Prabhupada gives the example just like the body. The body has the different areas. So the head has a very particular function, the chest, the arms have a particular function, the stomach has a particular function, the legs have a particular function. That's natural. So that can't be changed because that is the nature of the object. So a society as a whole naturally has a Varnashram division. It's natural. It's always there. However, in Kali Yuga, it can't manifest properly. As Prabhupada points out, it's just like a deteriorated version of the system. It's not the original system. And we can't have the original system in Kali Yuga. You can't have what's spoken of here again in Kali Yuga. Primarily, as Prabhupada points out here, because there is no powerful kshatriya to develop it and to maintain it. It has to be powerful kshatriyas, not like what we have now. We don't have the potency. Everything now has become mechanical. Wars are fought mechanically. Mm-hmm. If I want to fight you, then I take a gun and I shoot you with a mechanism. Whereas previously it was based on bravery or courage. It's not so much courage when I'm holding a gun. As I do whatever I want. I mean, doesn't take a lot of courage. Whereas previously, you had to take a bow. A bow takes time to string. It takes time to load. It takes time to aim, to shoot. You know, you have to be courageous and strong. Because in that time, that person has time to react. So it was very different then. These days, the wars are fought with missiles. And Prabhupada points out that maybe one day the missiles may come, and they may fly through the air. And devotees said to Prabhupada, what will we do if that happens? And Prabhupada said, well, really it's up to Krishna if that will happen. And Prabhupada even said that the demigods, if the missiles are flowing through the air, they can grab them mid-air and then throw them into outer space if they want. So even if the missiles come, then the demigods can interfere. They may, if they want, they may interfere. They may not let it become catastrophic. Or Prabhupada says, if it does happen, devotees say, what will we do? Prabhupada said, we will preach. Because it will be very conducive for preaching. Because they'll only be suffering. And when people suffer, then they incline towards spiritual life. So, this is the reason we can't have the Varnashram system now, in this age. You can have something that looks like the Varnashram system, but you can't have the actual Varnashram system. The world was very different then. You see, now everything has become degraded. And Prabhupada points out that the material world, particularly now in Kali Yuga, people are too much absorbed in sense gratification. This is mentioned in the first canto, the first chapter of the Bhagavatam. It says there are certain symptoms in this age. What are the symptoms of this age? People are short-lived, they're unfortunate, they're misguided, misdirected. The Bhagavatam says, and above all, everyone is
disturbed, selfish.
Yeah. Bhagavatam says, always disturbed. That's the nature of everyone in this world, always disturbed. You just have to touch someone on the arm. You know, in the morning, everyone's going around Tulsi. In the morning, you just bump someone accidentally in a devotee. People are just so disturbed in this day. You just have to look at someone the wrong way. And they're totally like it. Kali Yuga is like that. I remember a few years ago I was in the city and I went to park. I was about to park, so I came down. I was going to reverse back. So the car came out. And then another car came from behind and just shot in. And the guy got out, you know, with his girlfriend and locked the car in and kind of started walking off. And his whole mood was like, you know, because he knew he'd done the wrong thing. I was waiting to get in there and he just shot in. So I wound the window down and I said, excuse me. And I said, you know, I was waiting to get in there. And because I was nice to him, it totally disarmed him because he was ready to, you know, he was looking at me like, you know. I thought, my God, you know, I'm just trying to park a car. You know, it's about to turn into a fight. You know, based over a car space. So just because I was nice to him, and then he goes, oh, sorry. And then he, you know, acted like he was didn't realise what he'd done, and then he got in the car and moved the car. But these days, you just have to look at someone the wrong way. What to speak of, say something wrong. And you just say one thing to someone, and they won't speak to you for the rest of their life. Just say one thing. Just look at someone the wrong way. What to speak if you actually do something to someone, and the whole family becomes, you know, families don't talk for years and decades, just because of one small thing. This is Kali Yuga. Everything is always disturbed. That's the nature of the age. Everyone's disturbed in consciousness. Srila Prabhupada said, ISKCON is a hospital. Sometimes we wonder why things are a little bit, you know, amongst the devotees, things are not totally normal. Sometimes devotees are not acting, you know, we don't act properly or another devotee doesn't act. And we wonder, why is that? We're all supposed to be devotees. You know, Prabhupada said, this is Vrindavan, this is Vaikuntha. Why is it? Because Prabhupada said it's a hospital. So a hospital means everyone's still improving. It means that you're being cured. We're not cured yet. That's why we still do strange things. Do you ever do strange things sometimes? You know, sometimes we act, because, you know, there's two natures inside, lower nature, higher nature. Sometimes the lower nature takes over. And we act in a way, we speak how we should not speak, we act how we should not act. We look at someone how we should not look at someone. So therefore, in the hospital, there is... So in Kali Yuga, everything is always disturbed. So how do we rise above Kali Yuga? That's the point. How do we rise above the influence of Kali Yuga? It is by the process. Kali Kali Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. Kalo Nite. What is the verse? Kalo Nite. Yeah, but what was the first line? Dosha, yeah, sorry. Yeah, that word was not coming into my mind. That's the most important word. Lord Dosha, Nite Raja. Right? Dosha, what is dosha? Dosha is a very, very nice pancake. Very nice, with coconut chutney. And sambar is good. You had this before? Dosha. The Indian pancake. Savory pancake. So Kali Yuga is full of Indian pancakes.
That's good.
Yeah, that is good. Savory pancake. Kale dosha. Ite raja. Dosha means a fault, a defect. Dosha. Just like in Ayurveda, we say the three doshas. You have three doshas. When they're out of balance, that is called illness or disease. Yeah? When your doshas are out of balance. So dosha means a fault, something defective, something which can change, or something which can go wrong. So in the Kali Yuga, things are always disturbed. People are always disturbed. Right? In the mind, in their speech, in their activities, everything is always disturbed. So then what is the remedy? And the Bhagavad Gita says the only remedy is congregational chanting of the holy name, that kirtanat eva krishnasya edlipshu abhat mukta sangha paramvrajet. Mukta sangha. Mukta means liberation. We become liberated by the effects of Kali Yuga, by a disturbed mind, a disturbed consciousness, a disturbed body, by the powerful chanting congregationally of the holy name of Krishna. That is the system. So, in the Bhagavatam, it says in that first chapter of the first canto, it said that is the nature of this age. And Prabhupada, in his purport, the purport is very enlightening. Prabhupada said one of the problems, the main problems with Kali Yuga is over-sense gratification. Right? Life has become too easy now in Kali Yuga. If you read what's going on here, this is one of the reasons why we can't have the Varnashram system properly at this point in time. You could do it in a previous age, but you can't do it now in this day and age. You can't have the Varnashram system as it was, because the world has changed so much. And what is one of the main defects of the modern world, the way it is now? Sense gratification comes way too easily. Right? You can just go down the shop, you can walk 500 metres, right, to 7-Eleven, walk in there, and you can get any type of what we call processed food or junk food you want. You can't do that in the past. There were no shops on the corners. Right? You lived in villages, and people had to cook real food and eat it. Right? And it changes the consciousness when you live like that. But now it's just over-sense gratification. Right? That's why we have the term fast food. You can just go in, you just give someone a little bit of paper, or these days you just swipe a piece of plastic, and they just give you fast food. You know, it's complete. It has nutritional value, is very, very minimal. They did a test, I think in America, on rats and breakfast cereals. Right? So they gave the rats the breakfast cereal. Right? So that, you know, like cornflakes, they come in a box. So you have the box and the breakfast cereal. So the rat, could come in to see how much nutritional content was in the cornflakes. He comes into the test arena and he ate the box. Because the box had more nutrition in it than the cornflakes. Right? This is Kali Yuga. There's no nutrition in the food. Practically speaking, if something is processed, the nutritional content is very minimal. Like, we're talking seriously minimal. It's like less than 1% of actual nutritional content. traditionally, people ate whole food. Now it's like it's a movement, or the whole food movement. You could just call it the normal movement, or, you know, the way it used to be movement, or the way it always was movement. Right? And then we changed everything in recent history, and then we made everything artificial. So Prabhupada said, too much sense gratification. You can just get whatever you want, whenever you want now. You can go anywhere. Like, you just walk within 5 kilometers of this temple, you can get anything you want, any type of sensual experience you want. Right? It's just freely available. It wasn't like that in the past. And then what happens to people? Right? It disturbs their consciousness. It breaks down your body. It breaks down your mind. It breaks down your everything. Like, your entire subtle body and your gross body becomes disturbed and degenerated. Just like when people take drugs. That's why one of our principles is no intoxication. When you take intoxication, right, all those types of drugs, it puts holes in the subtle body. Right? The subtle body becomes weakened by taking drugs, by substance abuse. And then you see the people who take a lot of it, they get a lot of mental diseases. They suffer because the subtle body becomes weak. Right? Then the mind is weak, the intelligence is weak. And you see the modern civilization, people have got so many problems. World Health Organization says the number one disease on the planet right now is mental disease. Right? More than heart disease, more than cancer. The main problem now is just mental disease because people are just deteriorating themselves. And that is because too much sense gratification. Right? Unrestricted. Doing the wrong things. This is Kali Yuga. So then it breaks down everything. And then we can't have the actual Varnashram system. The Varnashram system, to have what was there previously, as Prabhupada says here, it requires the Kshatriya. That's what this verse is about. Right? The Kshatriya is the person who keeps society together. Right? He is the protector. Right? We don't have that kind of Kshatriya now. Therefore, it's not possible to keep society and to maintain a Varnashram system. If you had an actual Kshatriya walk in here now, he could redevelop the Varnashram system. So imagine if Arjuna came back. Right? He could reintroduce Varnashram once again. Right? You could not defeat him in battle. His weapons were so powerful. Right? His subtle weapons coming from the mode of goodness were so powerful. Even the modern weapons, which are coming from the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance, they could not defeat him. Even if you fired nuclear missiles, he's able to destroy them with his Brahmastra. Right? By putting a similar nuclear weapon, he can just dismantle that weapon. So it would take someone like that to reinstitute the Varnashram system. But we don't have that kind of thing. So then, the question is, why is the Varnashram system there? Why do we have it? What is its purpose? Prabhupada says in the purport, what is the purpose of the Varnashram system? Right? Prabhupada says, it is to make spiritual advancement. It is to elevate society towards self-realization. Human society means that society which is making progress towards spiritual realization. That's why the Varnashram system there. That is what the human form of life is for. Right? If you're in this human form of life, which we all are, and we don't make spiritual advancement, then what is the point? Right? You're better off having another species or another form. Because in that form, you can satisfy whatever material desire you have better than you can in this form. This form is not meant for sense gratification. Right? You can enjoy your senses in this form, but it's not the best form for sense gratification. There are other forms which are better for all the different types of sense gratification. What is this form for? As Prabhupada says here, it is for spiritual realization. It's to elevate your consciousness towards God. Right? To become an enlightened soul. That is the whole point of the Varnashram system. So, we can't have the Varnas as they were previously, although Prabhupada says they are still there. We still see, like, certain devotees are more Brahminical, certain devotees are more martial, certain devotees are more mercantile, certain devotees are more into labor, right? So we have, like, a semblance of the system. You're not going to have the exact system. But what we do have in Kali Yuga, to a degree, is the ashram system. So the word ashram means, comes from the word ashraya. Ashraya means shelter. Right? So why do we go through the ashrams? Because they're meant to take us to spiritual realization. That's the entire point of your ashram. Right? And in the eighth canto, there's the famous purport in the Gajendra Moksha, or the pastime of Gajendra, we hear about the Prabhupada explains how you have to be situated in the correct ashram to make spiritual advancement. Now, what divides the ashrams? Right? Why do we choose why you're in one ashram or the other? Right? It's based upon your attachment to sex desire or sex life. That is why you go into a particular ashram or you stay in one particular ashram. Right? Sex life is the demarcation which divides society. Right? As Freud said, it is the active principle. Prabhupada says in the very first purport of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada said it is the active principle of the material world. Everything is generated and goes on and is stimulated by sex desire. And Freud said the same thing. He said everything is based on sex desire. That's why we do anything. And then Brahmananda Prabhu, he said to Prabhupada, he said that Freud says this, and he thought the Prabhupada would say, no, that's not correct. And Prabhupada said, no, actually, Freud is correct. Everything is generated by sex desire in this material world. That's why everyone does everything. So the Varnashram system is to divide us according to our attachment to sex. That is the purpose of the Varnashram system. Now, in the modern world, you are considered successful if you indulge in sex. That is considered success. In the modern world, if you are able to have sex whenever you want, you're considered to be the most successful person. In the Vedic culture, the Aryan culture, which Prabhupada is speaking about here, it's the opposite. The persons who detach themselves from sex and do not engage in sex, right, and renounce sex, they're considered to be the most valuable people in society and the most advanced people spiritually. And we give respect to those people the most. Right? Just like a sannyasi takes the vow, right, that he will never have sex life. Right? So therefore, Prabhupada says, why do we bow down before a sannyasi? Why do we bow down before the sannyasi? Prabhupada said, because he has conquered sex desire. Therefore, we bow down. Because that's a great feat. Most of us can't do that. So therefore, one who has done that, then he is considered to be the most valuable person in society. So it is exactly the opposite. Because the society is meant for spiritual progress, spiritual advancement. So then each of the Varnas has a particular religious principle attached to it. Each of the ashrams has a particular religious principle attached to it. What is the religious principle for the brahmachari or the brahmacharini?
Swajaya,
yeah. You know, Prabhupada says vidya. Vidya means?
Learning,
cultivating knowledge. That's the point of the brahmachari ashram and the brahmacharini ashram. If you're fortunate enough, because Prabhupada also says the best situation in the material world is the brahmachari ashram. Right? It's better than sannyas, because in sannyas there's a lot of social pressure. And it's not easy to be a sannyasi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that, because he was a sannyasi, and he explains that if a white sheet has one black spot on it, everyone says, oh, look at the black spot, even though the whole sheet is white. So he says about being a sannyasi, because Lord Chaitanya was also criticized. He said, as a sannyasi, you just have one small fault, right? And everyone says, oh, just look. Just like he was served by Ramachandra Puri. He was serving in prasadam, and he said, do you want some sweets? Lord Chaitanya said, okay. So he took some sweets. And he said, do you want some more? And Lord Chaitanya said, okay. So he took some more. And he said, just look, you can't control your senses. No sense control. You're supposed to be a sannyasi and you can't stop from eating sweets. What sort of a sannyasi are you? So then Lord Chaitanya said, okay, from now on, no sweets. He said, no rich food. He said, I'll only eat simple food from now on, so I won't be criticized. So that is the situation. For a sannyasi, there's a lot of social pressure. Because if he does anything which is even slightly controversial, everyone will just criticize. So Prabhupada said, actually, brahmachari life is the best. Now, what is brahmachari and brahmacharini life for? It is for cultivation of knowledge. That's the point of the ashram. It's a great facility because you have simplicity. Prabhupada says the brahmachari has three bags. Right? The bead bag, the book bag, and the sleeping bag. So that's it. That's basically your life. Right? You get up in the morning, you get your bead bag, you chant japa. Right? And after breakfast, you get your book bag, you go out and distribute books. Right? And then you come back and you're so tired. Prabhupada says as soon as the brahmachari puts his head on the pillow, he just falls asleep. Because all day he's been serving Krishna, and then he just gets in the sleeping bag, and that's it. That's his whole life, and he's happy, totally liberated. Whereas for the next ashram, what is the next ashram called? The Grihastha. And what is the religious principle for the Grihastha? Charity, a dharma. He has to give charity. It means, why is he giving something away? Because he has so much. That is the nature of Grihastha ashram. What is the nature of the wife? She is called Stri, the woman. Stri means to like expand, to advance, to become voluminous. That is the nature. Right? The brahmachari gets married, right? But then because he's attached to the woman, then he gets married and then suddenly everything has to expand. Then you have to have five cars. You have to have two houses. You have to have three kids. Huey, Dewey, Louie. Right? And then it just expands. Right? And it does not stop the expansion. So therefore, for a Grihastha, he can only become purified when he renounces his material assets. Right? It is necessary for Grihastha ashram. Prabhupada even says, if the Grihastha does not give in charity, he does not become purified. And sometimes it's like that for a Grihastha. To get a donation from the Grihastha, sometimes it's easier to take one of their teeth out of their mouth. Please just give a donation. Oh, Prabhuji. Because like, money is like the most coveted object in this day and age. So to get a donation from someone, it's like, whoa, it's like a great... But according to the system, you are meant to give charity. That is the purpose of the Grihastha. That's how you become purified. If you don't do it, it's not the only way you become purified as a Grihastha. Right? Because you can give charity in different ways. You can give your time. Right? You can give your intellect. You can give your words. There's other ways to become purified. But if you don't give your material assets, then you become greedy. It's there in the consciousness. You become attached. So you must give. And actually, Prabhupada was discussing last night. Last night we were discussing the pastime of Manigriva and Nalakovara, who are the two sons of Kuvera. So they were rich boys. They had a lot of wealth. And Prabhupada, it's interesting actually, because they pointed out this particular pastime. It's very revealing when you study the Bhagavatam carefully. It says that out of all of the types of sense enjoyment, or Queen Kunti says, Janmaishraya Shrutashriya. She says, if you're bewildered by those four things, you can't become a kinshana gochuram. You can't become detached from the material world. And if you look at our consciousness, we all become attached to these things. Jamma means if you have a nice family, a good birth, you become attached to it, you become proud. Aishwarya means the wealth. Shruta means if you're knowledgeable, learned. And Shribya means if you're attractive physically. Then you become attached to those four things. And then it's very difficult to chant the holy name sincerely. But of the four, Narad Muni, he analyzes, he says of the four, the most bewildering is wealth. If you get money, you become very proud. And it's interesting because Narada then gives the remedy. He says, how do you become detached? How does a wealthy person become detached? He said, the only way a wealthy person can become detached is by being forced into poverty. When everything is taken away. And that's what Narada did to the two boys. He saw, you're too attached, you two. You have so much facility and you're bewildered by it. I'll take everything away. Right? And I'll make you become trees. So in other words, you have nothing. As a tree, you don't possess anything. It's just suffering. Trees are just, it's in a suffering condition. So Prabhupada advises that as a devotee, we shouldn't wait to be put into that situation, where everything gets totally ripped away. As a grihastha, if you follow the dharma of giving, charity, then you don't have to become bewildered and you don't have to become proud and you don't have to become attached. So you have to give. So then the question is, how much should you give as a grihastha? Because the scriptures say different things. Right? The pastime of Rupa Goswami, when he renounced and he went to Vrindavan, he gave 50%. And Prabhupada says that that should be the standard, right? Which is not actually possible right in this day and age. If you give 50%, you can't live. Right? So how much should you give? You should give as much as you can so that you can still maintain your family properly, but that you're giving a contribution. When it begins to hurt, when you feel some discomfort, some pain, you know, when one of the teeth is being pulled out and you're actually feeling it, that's how much you should give as a devotee, as a grihastha. We give enough that we actually feel, oh, I gave something substantial, because then you notice it. And that's when you become purified. Because all night you're going to be laying in bed, you're going to be thinking, my God, I gave so much. Right? And that's purifying, because you just gave that to Krishna. Right? So you're going to be thinking of Krishna, wow, Krishna's really enjoying now because I just gave him so much. So that is, it has to be that you feel the sacrifice. That's the purification. So for a grihastha, he has to become purified by dana. Right? And then the vanaprastha, how does he become purified? What's the religious principle? Yeah, tapa, by austerity. He has to perform austerity. That's what vanaprastha is for. Vanaprastha means that the husband and the wife, they leave the grihastha situation. And they practice simplicity, austerity. They forcibly give up their material attachments, simplify. You have to get to a point in your life, and Prabhupada says again and again and again in these purports, he says that we have to get to the age of 50. At the age of 50, we have to simplify things. Right? It's not for expansion. It's for simplification. So when the age of 50 comes, you have to fall. If you're not doing it naturally from spiritual realization, then you have to do it practically. You have to force yourself to do it. Simplify things and become more surrendered to Krishna. So that is vanaprastha ashram. By doing some austerity, you become purified. Austerity purifies all of us. That is why we need to do austerity. Tapasya. What does tapasya mean by definition? Means voluntarily giving up something you do not like to give up. Right? And that's actually one of the principles of bhakti. If you look into the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the first 10 items of bhakti, one of the 10 items is that you must give up things which you do not like to give up and accept things that you do not like to accept. That's an item of bhakti. So that austerity purifies the consciousness. That is what vanaprastha is for. And then sannyas, that's the final ashram. And sannyas, what is the religious principle? Satyam. Satyam means truth. It means absorbing yourself in param satyam. Right? The supreme absolute truth. The sannyasi, he just absorbs himself in spiritual reality. That is the purpose of the ashram. Right? There's no other person. He takes the danda. The mind, the body, the words are just going to be used exclusively in Krishna's service. Not in anything material anymore. That is the purpose of the ashram. Right? That's a very advanced level of consciousness. So not that everyone here will take sannyas formally, but at least in our consciousness we have to become sannyas. Sannyas means just completely absorbed in Krishna, completely surrendered to Krishna, which is Krishna's final instruction in the Gita. Give up everything and just surrender to me. So in the Vanashram system, at least we can follow this in Kali Yuga. If we're a brahmachari, follow vidya. If you're a grihastha, follow dana. If you're a vanaprastha, become to austerity. And if you're a sannyasi, completely absorb yourself in satya. Because the vana system in Kali Yuga, you can't fully manifest it. It's not possible. We can follow it to some degree, but we cannot do it perfectly. So it says here that the reason they had this system previously is because Swayambhu Manu was so powerful. Right? It said when his army came, the whole earth was moving. That's what it feels like when a powerful army comes. These days you'll never see the army. Because I just send missiles overhead. bomb everything before the people even get there. So it's not, there's no courage. And that's why we can't have all these things, because we don't have these powerful leaders like we did previously. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we discussed.
You said before the Brahmacharya life is for the cultivation of knowledge.
Yeah.
And now my question is, but like all the Brahmacharyas that are living in the ashram, I think actually all Brahmacharyas at this point, actually they're doing a lot of services. So while doing the service, there's no time. There's no time for reading books or something like this. So often there are many days actually where you start with the morning program, then you practice prasada, then you start your service. And then actually when you finish everything and you come back in the ashram and you want to sit down to read something, you're so tired that you start reading and after a couple of chapters you just fall asleep. So does it mean like, is the service actually like more important than the cultivation of knowledge, or is the process of serving actually the process of cultivating knowledge?
Yeah. It means that you have to be very intelligent in the use of your time. My Guru Maharaj, he was serving Prabhupada in the final days before Prabhupada left this earth in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada, he'd wake up in the morning, he was sleeping about 5 to 6 hours a night maximum. And then he'd wake up in the morning and he would take bath and go straight to Prabhupada. And then he would sit with Prabhupada, right, and rub Prabhupada's back. At one point he was chanting his japa, and Prabhupada said, "You chant, I will listen," because Prabhupada didn't have the strength to chant. So he was just with Prabhupada, and he was with Prabhupada all day. The only time he'd leave, he'd just go and have something to eat, come straight back. Prabhupada nearly, you know, like, I don't know, 14 hours a day or something, you know. And so, you know, go to the toilet, eat, take bath. You know, it was like very intense. So at one point, Prabhupada turned to him and he said, "Are you reading my books?" And he just looked at Prabhupada. He was speechless. Where's the time? You know, he didn't say anything. He just looked at Prabhupada. Where is the time? How can I be reading it? Prabhupada said, "You need to eat less and sleep less." And he just looked at Prabhupada in disbelief. Like Prabhupada, like, it's, what, how's it possible? And Prabhupada said, "It requires practice." Prabhupada said this, that it requires practice. Prabhupada had to build up to the level. When he got to the West and we saw Prabhupada, that's when he was sleeping 2 hours a night. And then he'd have the massage during the day, which was considered to be rest. And he had two half-hour rests after he ate during the day. So in total, 3 to 4 hours of what we call rest a day, that was Prabhupada. But Prabhupada built up to that over the years, to that level. But that's the point, is that we have to reduce things to a practical level, not to an artificial level, but to a practical level. One time, my Guru Maharaj, he was on the train with Prabhupada in India. So they're on the train, and then they took rest about 10:30. Prabhupada would take rest about 10:30. And then 12:30, Prabhupada just turned the light on and just up, because that was Prabhupada. He slept 2 hours and then he got up and did the translation. At Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you know, the light came on, he looked up and Prabhupada was sitting up. So he offered his obeisances and sat up, you know, with Prabhupada, because he wanted to be sleeping in front of him. Prabhupada said, "No, you take rest." He said, "This is not for you. You take rest. You can't do what I'm doing." So we have to be practical. Reduce it to a practical level. Now, as a brahmachari, you have to, like what we're doing now is reading or hearing. It's called shravanam. Right? There are 9 items of bhakti. So the first item of bhakti is called shravanam. And Prabhupada says in his commentary in the 7th canto is that there is passive and active hearing. So passive means you read the book, means just you and the book. And active means you're listening. So you're reading now, you're hearing now. This is the process. And Prabhupada actually says, to hear the lectures explained by realized devotees, whoever's giving the Bhagavad Gita class is giving their realization, he said that is more powerful, more effective, or more purifying than just reading by yourself. Because you can read, but then if someone speaks it and explains it, you can learn more. Right? And then as a brahmachari, when I first became a brahmachari, then A couple of months after I joined them, my Guru Maharaj came through the temple. And one thing I heard him say in his lecture is that he has a little tape recorder. Because when we used to have tapes, now we have like MP3s and like that. So then he said that in the morning, while he's taking his bath, right, and getting ready and everything, you've got to have half an hour in the morning like that, he's listening to a lecture that whole time. So then I thought, okay. So I started doing that. I've been doing that ever since then. Right. So there's half an hour in the morning you've got. You've already listened to a lecture, right? You come into the temple, you've just had half an hour for class, right? Then if you say you're going to Crossways, say that's your service, right? There's at least 20 minutes, I don't know how long it takes, between here and there, 20 minutes or whatever it takes to get there, right? So I remember when we were brahmacharis, right? We were learning shlokas. In the morning, we'd finish class, we'd go and get the prasadam, bring the prasadam upstairs. We used to carry little shloka cards with us, right? So as we're going up and down the stairs, you know, you can learn half a verse in that time, right? So the point is, time is there, but you have to learn to utilize the time, right? The point is, we waste time. It is true, we do a lot of service, and that is necessary because there's very few of us, right? And there's a big operation which is taking place. Right? So it means we have to surrender. And sometimes we do feel like I want to spend more time studying. And that's not invalid. That's good. Especially as a brahmachari, that's valid. But if we don't go out and do the service, then the service doesn't get done. And the whole operation, it begins to... So then we have to sacrifice. But Krishna sees that sacrifice. And if you do the service and you surrender, because the essence of bhakti is surrender. Right? So if you do the service, when you do read, because there is time to read, when you do read, you'll get so much more, even though it may be less time. Right? Instead of maybe 2 hours, you're only doing half an hour or 1 hour. But in that time, Krishna will give you so much more because you've surrendered to Him. So time is there. It is challenging that time is there. And you can make time. It's always there. Is that okay?
Yeah.
You want to add something? Or? Is that okay? Or you want
to say? It's okay. It's okay. Yes. Just thinking about how to bring it into motion.
Yeah. So that means you have to be intelligent. That's the point. I walked in this temple the first time, and Jagannath Balabha Prabhu, you know Jagannath Balabha? He lives in your ashram, down the front.
Ah, yes.
He's about 70 years old now. So he was sitting over there reading a book. First time I walked in here, middle of the day, there was no one around, and he's just sitting there reading a book. And I thought, that's what I want. I just want to come to somewhere peaceful where I can just read and study and like this. Right? So then I joined, right? And then they sent me to Crossways. And then that was it. I haven't been peaceful for the last... Yeah, there's always so much to do. So much service to do. But simultaneously, I mean, my idea, honestly, when I walked in here, I thought it was like a monastery. You know, I thought we sit around and we study and we do this and that. And then, you know, as soon as I moved in, they said, no, go and do this, go and do that. And that's what I've been doing ever since then. You're just always doing something. But the point is I've studied Prabhupada's books over the years. I make time to study Prabhupada's books because there's always time, particularly by hearing lectures. You know, when I was a brahmachari, I used to listen between 2 hours and 4 hours a day to lectures every day for years, 2 hours to 4 hours. Because there is time there, you just got to make the time. You know, if I was out, I'd go out and distribute books, right? I'd come back and have lunch in my car, just put a lecture on, half an hour, there you go. So if you add it up all through the day, there's actually a lot of time there. You have to use the time. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Did you want to add something?
Is Guru Maharaj, Mata Krishna Goswami?
My Guru Maharaj? Yeah, Tamal Krishna Goswami. Any Rudra Prabhu, do you want to say something?
Study of Vedic literature is not the only thing that brahmacharya is supposed to do. That's part of it, because in the brahmacharya ashram you're not with a lot of complications, and so it gives you an opportunity to keep life simple so that one can focus on cultivating spiritual life. There are other gives a description of the other aspects of brahmacharya and the the mood of service, as you mentioned, is that dedication to the Guru's mission. And that's what we dedicated our, a lot of our time. And Prabhupada wanted us to study his books. So I think what he says really is pertinent. I was talking to another young devotee, and he was making the same comment that he didn't have time to read. And I learned early on that there's always time in the day where you could just cut out and sit in a quiet place and read, even in Melbourne. And after the morning program is a good time, just cut out before breakfast, read for 20 minutes. It's not difficult to do. I read the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita in, I don't know, a year maybe, by just doing that. So just, you identify the opportunity, find a quiet spot, sit down, read. Not that hard. And you know, Prabhupada's given us the Bhagavad Gita class, that's part of that process. And as you say, it is possible with good time management, you can do it.
Any other questions? Yeah, it means vanaprastha means vanaprastha is like over the age of 50, and she's saying that we're meant to be performing the religious principle is austerity, but you need more comfort. So it's kind of contradictory how we can do it as a vanaprastha. But when it means austerity, it doesn't necessarily mean, especially in this day and age, it doesn't necessarily mean just making your material life uncomfortable. You can still be comfortable, and you may even, as you say, you may even need more comfort. Just like on the, we do the retreats in India at Govardhan, and then last year, because Burujan Prabhu is about 70 years old now, so last year he normally stays where we stay, where there's no hot showers, no hot water, and he said, this year I can't do it. He said, it's too austere. So he went to the other ashram where they have, you know, hot water, like hot water services, so we stayed there. So as the body gets older, you do need more facility and comfort. But the austerity means that you are diminishing or reducing your material activities. That's the austerity. That's what Krishna's looking for. Krishna's not looking for, did you have a cold shower? Or, you know, I mean, that's like, Krishna's not impressed. Oh, I had a cold shower. I mean, yeah, of course he's impressed, but it's not going to take you back to the spiritual world. It's like Lord Chaitanya was doing the kirtan in Srivas Thakur's house. And Lord Chaitanya was doing the kirtan. Then he said, I'm not feeling the ecstasy. He said, there's someone here who's not qualified. There's someone who should not be here. He said to Srivas, who is here? There's someone here who's not meant to be here. So they lifted up the basket. And then the brahmachari is under the basket. And Lord Chaitanya said, what is he doing here? He said, this is my prema sankirtan. He's not on that level. Why is he here? And Srivas Thakur says, he only drinks milk and eats fruit. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, if that's all it took to get back to the spiritual world, I would be doing it. But that is not the process. He said, so he has to go out. So he went out. Right? And then Lord Chaitanya started the kirtan again. But when he went out, then he realized his foolishness. I was trying to get into the association of the Supreme Lord through austerity. That's not the process. Right? The process is bhakti. So he changed his consciousness, and Lord Chaitanya being Savagya, means all-knowing. Then he said, after some time, he said, Sri, he said, go and get him now, he's ready now. And he brought him back in, and he joined in the kirtan with everyone else. So it doesn't mean, it means reducing your material activities. Not necessarily your material necessities. Of course, you'll simplify things. But it doesn't mean you have to just live austerely to get back to Krishna. Right? You can have warm showers and you can, you know, eat palatable food. But more and more time will go towards Krishna, and less time. And you feel like that. Right? As a grihastha, like sometimes you just feel like, you know, when's Krishna going to liberate me from this? Right? Because it's just, you have to deal with the material energy so much. The kids, you have to change the nappies. Right? And you get the sandalwood pulp from the nappies, and then you. So it's like you get, there's so much material distraction in the grihastha ashram. Vanaprastha means, okay, I'm older now, the kids are married, I've done my duties, now I just want to do service for Krishna. So the husband and wife, they go together and they just concentrate more on that. That's what Krishna's looking for. He's not looking for... So when it says tapa, but tapa means increase, tapo divyam, as Rishabdev says, transcendental austerity, not material austerity. Just like Prabhupada was in Jagannath Puri, and Prabhupada went down to the beach, and then all the devotees ran after Prabhupada, and the sand was hot. So they were burning their feet, because they wanted to be with Prabhupada. But Prabhupada was sensible. He put his shoes on before he went to the ocean. He was walking across the hot sand, but everyone else was around, they go, ah, ah, ah. And Prabhupada turned around, and he said, no, this is not the austerity we do in Kali Yuga. Not this kind of austerity. He said, go back and get your shoes. So not artificial austerity, but austerity means to dedicate yourself more to the service of Guru and Krishna. Is that okay? Any other question?
Just a comment. You've got to be careful about citing the 50-year rule, 50-year-old rule. When I turn 50, my mum said to me, now what are you going to do? When I was a younger lady, I told her, when you're 50,
things change as you get older. Realise that. Yeah, I remember when I was in Adelaide in 97, I think it was, 97, 98. And we had this public wedding in the part of the Adelaide Festival. They have like a public wedding every night for 2 weeks. It's called Every Night a Wedding. It was like part of the Adelaide Festival. So they invited us to a Hare Krishna wedding. So we went down there and we did a wedding. And then they made a video, they made a documentary, and these filmmakers came and they... And I remember sitting there being interviewed by them. And, you know, I was telling them, oh, you know, the system is, you know, we stay together until we're 50 and then we renounce and then I go off and I take sannyas and, you know, like that. And the guy's going, really? He's going, really? Like this? Like that? And now I'm almost 50. And like, you know, now I know I'm not going to take sannyas. You know, guaranteed. So when you're young, you have this idealistic kind of concept of so many things as a devotee. But when you get older, you just realize you become more practical. Because what's Krishna looking for? Krishna's looking for bhakti, right? We all do artis for the deities, right? Or many devotees do artis. At home you do arti. So you're on the altar in front of Radha Balabha, you're offering the flowers. The perfection of Krishna consciousness is that when there's tears in your eyes, right? When you feel so much emotion and attachment to Krishna, please accept this flower. That's what Krishna's looking for, bhakti. It doesn't say anywhere in Bhagavad Gita, you know, did you have a cold shower before you came in off of the arti? Right. There's no, you know, are you only eating fruit for breakfast? You know, it's not. Do you not have sugar in your milk? Yeah. Krishna's not. He's not analysing any of these things. The only thing he's looking for is bhakti. Patanam pushpam phalam toyam yome bhakshya. And he says ashnami. Ashnami means I will relish. I will accept your offering when you do it with the right intention. So it doesn't matter if you're a... That's why Lord Chaitanya said, it doesn't matter if you're a brahmachari, a grihastha, a vanaprastha, or a sannyasi. It doesn't matter. Because the only thing that's important in any of those ashrams is what is your bhakti? How pure is your bhakti? And at what level are you chanting the holy name of Krishna? Are you cultivating shuddha-nam? Because we have nama-parad, nama-bhas, and shuddha-nam. Shuddha-nam is the goal. And Lord Chaitanya never says you have to be in a particular ashram or a particular bhavana in order to chant purely. So you can be in any ashram. You can be a grihastha until the day you die. But if you're chanting purely, Krishna will accept you. You'll go back into the spiritual world. Is that okay? Any other question?
Just a comment on the austerity side of things and, you know, less sleep. We've got to be careful because we're already running on exist on the bodily platform, they're totally absorbed in their spiritual identity. And so their spiritual energy nourished their body. If we try to imitate that, we're just going to fall asleep, be weak, not be able to do anything, practically speaking. So I've seen many times, devotees would go to breakfast with a little bowl, right? But then they'll pile it right up, so it's 10 stories high. Or, there was one brahmacharini, the devotees knew that the children would always be austere, but the devotees knew that if they left their leftovers in the fridge, they'd all be gone, because she was eating them all. So, we've got to be, it's a balance to maintain our ability to stay awake and be alert and be able to chant Hare Krishna and practically engage in devotional service. And the ability to be, when I was a brahmachari, then I used to meditate on every single offering. And at the end of the day, I was thinking, how is it possible to eat every single offering? And I certainly attempted it on more than one occasion. Because, by this time I'd be thinking, oh boy, let's get out of here, it's breakfast time. And I used to think, how is it possible, to keep your senses under control? This Maha Prasadam. It's not possible.
Yeah, Prabhupada said to Umalpiti Prabhu, who was one of Prabhupada's early disciples from very, very beginning. It was about 1967, he said to Umalpiti. He said, Krishna consciousness means not too much sense gratification, not too much renunciation. Prabhupada said that. That was the very beginning of our movement. Not too much renunciation, not too much sense gratification. He said, to devotee means medium path. A majjhima means like middle, medium. So we should not be too renounced. I mean, it'd be renounced if it's natural, but not artificially, but not too much sense gratification also. So a devotee has to be that perfect middle. And when you find that, that's when you make advancement.
Six chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Yukta Viharasya. Yukta.
Question or comment?
Prabhupada ki.